I'm Sunil Paul. I'm a successful entrepreneur out of the internet world. And I started a venture fund in San Francisco called Spring Ventures, originally to invest primarily in clean technology. And so we've been doing that for many years with my partner, Nick Allen, here. And we've had some successes. We had two IPOs last year. But I want to talk today about why I'm devoting almost all of my time and money to the clean web, and tell you about why I'm so excited about this clean web idea and this clean web space, and why clean web will beat and better clean tech. So what is the clean web? This is a picture of the clean web. Now, I know you're saying, what does this have to do with technology? What does this have to do with the internet? I don't get it. Well, the point is that vibrant ecosystems like this around the world are best protected and promoted not by clean tech or by regulation, even though those things are going to be super important, but by information technology. Information technology is the biggest lever we have to affect those ecosystems. And I want to talk about, in this talk, about why this category of clean web is becoming one of the most exciting and most important categories in technology. And it's important because it's affecting the way that we use resources and the way the efficiency of resources. It affects the way that we do business in a more efficient way. And it will touch how we live, how we work, and even how we play. And I hope that you'll understand by the end of this talk why clean web is our best hope for scaling up clean technology. We're already starting to see innovations in the clean web, and I think you're going to be surprised that some of the companies that are the leaders in the clean web are companies that you never would have thought of as having a green or clean business model. And this category of clean web goes way beyond smart grid. I know many people here in the audience have a connection with the smart grid in one way or another, and certainly smart grid's part of it, but it goes way beyond that. Let's start with the history of clean tech. People have been trying to harness renewable energy for a very long time. Here's a picture from the early 20th century. And every president since Richard Nixon has said that we are going to reduce our dependence on foreign oil using renewable energy. This is a picture from 1979, Jimmy Carter installing solar panels on the White House during the Middle East oil crisis. And in fact, we've had a lot of success. The investment in clean tech in the last 10 years has gone from almost zero to about $250 billion per year. We've invested about $1 trillion over the last year, over the last decade, around the world in various kinds of clean energy. And at the same time, the cost of different kinds of clean energy has gone down dramatically. The curve going down is the cost of solar electricity. It's gone down in the last 3 years by about 70%, more than its average. And even other technologies like LED lights have also gone down pretty dramatically in the last year by about 50%. So that all looks pretty good. But if you back up and look at the big picture, it doesn't look so good. This is the percentage of energy being produced by renewables around the world. And you can see that for the last 20 years, it's more or less been flat at about 10%. And it has never gotten past that. And that's not good news, because scientists tell us that in order to avoid catastrophic climate change, we need to reduce the emissions around the world by about 7 gigatons by 2020, 7 gigatons of carbon dioxide per year by 2020. And this chart, it's a little hard to read, but this chart shows in 5 different categories of low carbon energy how far we have to go in order to achieve just 1 gigaton for each category. The point being, it's going to take a very long time. But what if we could move these technologies at web speed? So here's that same renewables chart along the bottom, renewables, and superimposed on it, the pace of adoption of the internet in the blue line, and then mobile next to it. These technologies are being adopted at a tremendous pace. Mary Meeker predicts that by 2014, the majority of internet connections are going to be coming from mobile devices, not the desktop. And the influence of the internet is touching things way beyond we ever expected in the past. Who would have imagined back in 1950s or even in the 1990s that you could like buy a pair of shoes without actually trying them on? Now, of course, we do that. A company called Zappos went from $1 million in revenue in 2000 to 8 years later having $1 billion in revenue. It's a new kind of capability enabled by the internet in an incredibly short amount of time. You probably know about Airbnb. Airbnb has taken this capability of peer-to-peer networks and allowed locals to offer accommodations all over the world. So we have, you today can go to 19,000 different cities around the world and get accommodations that vary everything from a castle to an igloo to a weird jumbo jet treehouse to your own private island. This is the kind of bottoms-up innovation that's possible instead of the kind of top-down infrastructure-heavy approach that we've had with renewables. If you can't compare these kinds of innovations to what the kind of innovations that are necessary to deploy renewables, we've had all kinds of problems with renewables. There is this massive capital expenditure that's required. There is this complexity in integrating renewables with the rest of the grid. There are limited channels to being able to get into the marketplace, and they're controlled by the incumbents. And there is limited information to consumers that's very hard and complicated to get access to. Let's talk more about Airbnb. This company has been growing so fast. This is a map of San Francisco and where listings are available. In just this short amount of time, it's proliferated all over San Francisco. But it's not just San Francisco. Spain, the UK, Italy, in the last year have all increased by orders of, you know, by 7x, 9x Airbnb listings. And today, Airbnb rents out every night over 10,000 rooms, which is larger than the largest hotels, some of the largest hotels in the world. And it's not just about better accommodations. The EPA estimates that the carbon profile of staying in a hotel is about three times that of staying in a home. And so the cumulative effect of all of the Airbnb activity has a significant impact on carbon. What if Airbnb and its competitors could take 5% of the hotel marketplace? What if it could take 30% of the hotel marketplace? You begin to see how these kind of activity can have a big impact. And Airbnb is having this kind of transformative effect on resources, but it's not the first time that we've had this kind of dramatic change in the way that resources are used. Let's step back and look at past revolutions in technology and resource use. Tremendous economic revolutions have occurred when new energy systems are combined with new communication systems. So in the 1800s, we had the invention of steam powered by coal, allowed the creation of railroads and the locomotive, coupled with the telegraph, gave rise to the corporation and the corporation as a corporate form, and allowed us to settle the frontier connecting the east and west coast of the United States. In the 1900s, we had the development of oil and internal combustion engines, which led to proliferation of highways, coupled with television and telephone, allowed us to have mass consumption and the suburbs. And today we've got silicon, which has resulted in microprocessors and the internet. And what comes next? That's the question. If you look at what, if you trace this revolution back to the beginning, 1971, when Intel invented the microprocessor, in the same year, Bell Labs invented the photovoltaic solar cell. That innovation has continued to this day, and in both energy and communications, has continued to improve. And increasingly, there are connections between this energy system and this information system. We have social networks that are creating an infrastructure of trust that companies like Airbnb can leverage for their own disruptive approaches. We have, and you know, Facebook today, if you took its population, it already equals about the third largest country in the world. Sensors are proliferating across the entire internet. The total number of devices connected to the internet right now is about 2.5 billion. And IBM predicts that by 10 years from now, there'll be about 100 billion devices connected. And the vast majority of those are going to be sensors. Already about 20% of the traffic that's not video on the internet is being generated by sensors. So sensors connect the physical world and the virtual world and create this kind of connective tissue between these energy systems and information systems. We have the mobile platform, which allows the internet to be ubiquitous and in our hands and not just on our desktops. And I mean, here's an interesting thing that I realized the other day listening to Apple's presentation of the new iPad. The iPad is only 2 years old, and yet it's already working its way into our lives in all kinds of ways we never imagined. The advent of massive amounts of data and better techniques to manage that data is another fundamental part of the clean web. The amount of data being created is just staggering. I found out that last year, in just 2 days, there was enough information created was the equivalent of all of the information created from the dawn of civilization to the dot-com crash. We're going to be able to use that data in ways to improve efficiency and create the clean web. So this might sound like a big theoretical exercise, but it's not. And if we take a look at where all of these trends are headed, especially in computing, we get appreciation for what's possible. So you guys all know about Moore's Law, and Moore's Law applies to all kinds of other information technology, including sensors and memory storage, et cetera. But if we just look at computing, the a little bit after 2000, $1,000 bought you the computing equivalent of about an insect brain. And about last year, it was equivalent to about a mouse brain. Just 11 years from now, $1,000 is going to buy you the computing equivalent of a human brain. And assuming trends continue, by the middle of this century, $1,000 will buy you the computing equivalent of all brains on Earth. Now, where's all this? What does this allow us to do? Well, one thing that allows us to do is all this tremendous computing power and all this bandwidth is allowing us to do things like very high-resolution teleconferencing. Many of you may know about this capability. This is Cisco's system. If you look carefully, you can see the creases in the chair on the other side of the room. The other side of this, what looks like a room, is a video conference with high-resolution CD-quality sound and stereo sound. One side can be Shanghai, the other side can be San Francisco, and pretty cool, right? But that capability is going to be in your phone soon. Well, what's all that got to do with a clean web? In England, there was a study done looking at the impact of this high-resolution video conferencing on travel and found that business travel declines by about 30% when these systems are implemented. And if you had that system implemented across all of the UK, they would save about 3 million barrels of oil per year. Now imagine if that same kind of capability were applied across the entire United States, around the entire world. That's the kind of potential that we're talking about with the clean web. Other kinds of transportation systems have also been affected by by clean web kind of ideas. There's Zipcar. Zipcar is enabled by information technology. It was started in the early 2000s. And take a look at how fast it's grown. From its early founding years to very recently, it's increased by about 10x in the number of vehicles. And why is that clean web? Isn't that just people just renting a car, big deal? But it turns out that for every vehicle that's placed into service in car sharing, according to Zipcar, about 15 other cars are no longer needed. So the cumulative effect of Zipcar plus other car sharing is almost 200,000 vehicles that have been avoided. So just think about all the plastic and the steel and the emissions associated with just that displacement. It's tiny, right? There are 250 million vehicles in the United States. But it's an illustration of what's possible with expansion of these kind of clean web ideas. The impact of all of that car sharing is already saving about 500,000 tons of carbon dioxide per year, which is about 40,000, the equivalent of about 40,000 homes. And mobile technology is making car sharing incredibly easy. You can make a reservation, find a car, make a reservation, unlock the vehicle, get in, have it billed to your credit card, all because of the mobile device. And it's getting even more powerful. Innovators and investors, including us, are investing in finding companies that are able to add even more capability to your phone so that you can do things like find taxis and limos and do ride sharing all through your mobile phone. So one day, you're going to be able to, instead of shopping for a car, you're going to say, never mind, I don't need that because there's an app for that. Your car is just going to be an iPhone app. That world is possible. I think it's pretty telling that a new innovation in car sharing is being pursued in places like France and California. One of the founders of Zipcar went to Paris to go create a peer-to-peer car sharing network, which is a different type of car sharing, leverages this kind of social network. And in California, because of a law that I helped get passed, there are a number of startups that are pursuing peer-to-peer car sharing in that state. So one more thing. This idea of having access to transportation and other kinds of resources is part of something we call the resource cloud. The resource cloud is the ability to access all kinds of different services and goods when you need them instead of having to buy them. Very related to this idea of collaborative consumption of the mesh. And that could be a car, but it could also be baby clothing, a wedding gown, a chainsaw, whatever kinds of things that you don't need all the time. But the clean web goes beyond just collaborative consumption. Take, for example, what's happening with peer-to-peer financing. You guys probably know about Kickstarter. They funded about $100 million worth of projects just in 2011. And what if you could take this concept of peer-to-peer financing and apply it to this huge capital-intensive clean tech world? There's a company doing exactly that. It turns out that only about 20% of those people who are interested in solar are eligible in places like California. Solar Mosaic is making it possible for solar projects to be funded by the crowd. This is an example of one in California. And that basically enables the 80% who can't invest in a solar project because they live in an apartment building, because they have shading in their roof, to participate in the solar economy and to get, potentially get a better return than they could get at, say, a bank or another bond-type instrument. The clean web is bringing this whole idea of energy management all the way down to the home. A company that's received a lot of positive buzz is Nest, founded by a number of Apple designers, including those that helped design the iPod and the iPhone. While smart thermostats have been around for a long time, this team, for the first time, put together an entire service that includes the gadget the software as well as the online service, much in the way that the iPod combined those services together to make a really intuitive, sensor-enabled product. And the clean web's affecting the neighborhood as well. We've got this simple little project created by friends who realized that in New York City, all of the parks, are the lights are left on, like a baseball diamond or whatever. The lights are left on from April to October all night long, regardless of whether anyone's playing. And so they came up with a prototype that allows a cell phone to turn those lights on and off. And so New York is now deploying this service so that a coach, when he shows up for a game, sends an SMS text and turns on the lights. Obviously saves a lot of money and is a lot more convenient for the people who live nearby who previously had to put up with, you know, lights into their dining room or whatever. Honest Buildings is a good example of a company that is leveraging big data to solve problems at a citywide level. So this is a company that is serving as a kind of linked up or Yelp for buildings. They're able to create a service that allows tenants to talk about the needs that they have from a building, that allows owners to kind of showcase what they've done for the building and ask for feedback, and allows vendors to either showcase their projects or to find new opportunities for them to do new things. And they're leveraging this big data idea to be able to understand better what kind of opportunities there are. So when you start rolling it all up, you can see how all of these connections throughout the home and the individual, connecting up through communities and cities and countries, can connect up into like a global nervous system leveraging the internet, and can help us manage the resources, better manage all the resources, be much more efficient in ways that we really never imagined before. But ultimately, all of that capability and all that creativity comes down to this. This is a picture of a nerve synapse. And in order for all of those things that we haven't dreamed of to happen, somebody has to dream them. And we're excited about the clean web as a platform for being able to dream these things. This is a picture of a hackathon. We've hosted a hackathon, most of you guys probably know, but hackathons when a group of people come together to create software applications, usually over about a 36, 48-hour period. So we've hosted two of these, San Francisco and New York, and there's another one coming up in Boston in a few weeks. These hackathons for the clean web have attracted hundreds of people. And what surprised me is there is tremendous passion around this topic. And a lot of people who show up really had never thought about applying information technology to these problems of resource constraints. And by the end of the weekend, producing, you know, in many cases, some interesting apps to help deal with that problem. So I hope this presentation gives you a sense of the clean web, what it is, and that it's growing. Here's some data from Cleantech Group. We know that about 21% of clean tech deals have been in the clean web category, and it's growing at about 37% a year. There are basically four different categories that clean web has clustered into. There's catalyzing clean tech, like Solar Mosaic, being able to lower the cost of capital, be able to allow many more people to access solar and accelerate its deployment. There's the resource cloud, things like Zipcar and Airbnb, allowing you to access services rather than having to buy a good. And there's big data, companies like Honest Buildings. They're able to analyze and create collaborations across lots and lots of connections to make better use of the built environment. And then there's this other category of new frontiers. I mean, this category is so new that we know there are things that have not yet been figured out, that have not yet, there are new categories yet to be invented using this platform. and we're eager to see what those are. But I have to tell you, it's our sense is, though, it's not quite enough, because a cell phone today has as much computing power as all of NASA in 1969. And NASA used that computing power to launch a man into the moon. We got this quote off the internet, off of Twitter. Today, we use that capability to launch birds into pigs. Surely we can do something better with all this capability. So I hope this picture makes more sense to you now. It's not just a representation of what we can do as a result of the Clean Web, but it's also a metaphor for all of the different components, the ecosystem that needs to be developed, that is developing around the Clean Web. Innovators, investors, policymakers, developers, PR people, branding people, consultants of various sorts, business people. It takes a big and complicated community to actually make all this happen. So this is a growing movement and growing idea. There are lots of ways to get connected to it. There are a couple of simple ways, certainly Twitter. There's a hackathon coming up in Boston. You can reach out. This is the hackathon website for Boston. And you can certainly reach out to me afterwards here, or to Nick, or some of the others. And a number of other ways to get involved. And so that's the end of the talk. Thanks. So if there are questions or comments, the best thing to do is to go up to the microphone so you can get it onto the podcast. Anything from Twitter we should be paying attention to?
Yeah,
I know one question that was posed to me earlier today by Jigar Shah, who runs Carbon War Room and started Sun Edison. He basically said, okay, I'm intrigued by this clean web thing, but is it really legitimate to say that you can achieve gigatons of reduction through clean web? And I think the answer there is, you know, unlike understanding what kind of scale solar or geothermal needs to be at to achieve gigaton scale, where you can do very quantitative analysis, it's a little harder to do in this space because it's not as well developed. But I think a simple little example illustrates what's possible, because solar electricity, for example, right now is about twice as expensive as the U.S. average grid price for retail, for a rooftop residential solar. And about 50% of today's costs are soft costs, ones that are vulnerable to being reduced by aggressive application of information technology. So what that says, kind of on its face, is that a big portion of the cost of solar electricity today, without any further reduction in the cost in hardware, can be addressed by clean web, and could make solar cost competitive. These are without subsidy numbers, by the way. Could make solar competitive with much of the United States, within the next 5 years. And that can help achieve gigaton scale, because you need that kind of grid parity and lower than the grid price to be able to really scale up solar. So anyway, that's one question that came off of Twitter.
Yeah,
you want to say your name and your affiliation?
Yeah, I'm Art. I'm from New York. We're consultants in software development, that space as well. Question, can you share some of the interesting projects from recent hackathons just to get a better idea of what are they about? And I actually have second comment,
Sure.
if you don't mind. I really like the idea of clean web being an enabler for clean tech. I would argue that, you know, it can exist on their own, because it's, you know, Airbnb and Zipcar, it's also enabler for people to consume more, to travel more, to use the car when they cannot afford it, or, you know, whatnot. So, you know, it is, it's really interesting to talk about how do you get the data, but, you know, we can put that aside after the conversation. But, you know, on about the hackathon, that would be really interesting. What's new there?
Sure, I think both those comments are great. As far as hackathon apps, some interesting ones include, I'm not going to be able to remember the names of all these apps. Some of them have continued to be, you know, websites that continue to operate. Some of them have just been weekend projects, and that was the end of it. But one was the one that won first place in New York was one that compared energy efficiency of different electric appliances on the internet, so you could have a very simple score comparing lots of different products. Another one, also out of New York, allowed was a hack done by Honest Buildings to do like a quick score of different buildings looking at their carbon footprint. An interesting project that came out of San Francisco, that one was called Fresher. Tried to disintermediate the food supply chain. About 30% of food is wasted in the supply chain, and this was an effort to try to collapse one of the elements of the supply chain from farmers to large purchasers by creating an information system. Anyway, those are a couple examples. And then on the efficiency thing, you're right, and there's been a lot of talk lately of I think it's Jevons' paradox that efficiency tends to increase consumption. You know, it depends on the circumstance. I mean, I don't think it's a straightforward thing to say that if you reduce the amount of resources used, that you're going to increase those resources. That's an observation from the steam era, that more efficient steam machines led to more use of steam machines. But when we're talking about something that is kind of an incidental service, like use of a car or being able to stay in a place instead of a hotel, I don't think that paradox is as strong. The data on Zipcar, I actually don't know about the Zipcar data, but I know another study that was done on City Car Share, it's another car sharing company, was done by an academic that included the increase in use of vehicles as a result of car sharing. So there's a lot more to talk about there, but that study is reasonably good. Yes. Airbnb, your comment is basically Airbnb could result in more airplane use because people, whatever, they want to be able to go to the igloo.
Yeah, so I can totally agree with God's
I agree. There's some controversy there. I think it nets out to more efficiency. But yes, you're right. Somebody might take an extra plane trip to be able to go stay in that igloo.
Hi, this is a really interesting conversation. My name is Allison Monahan. I'm here with Triple Pundit, and I was struck when I was looking at this. I live in San Francisco, so all of this completely makes sense to me. Yeah, I do Zipcar. I do Airbnb when I travel. But I was just struck by how urban so many of these solutions seem to be. And I previously studied architecture, and I think about where I grew up in North Carolina, and a car isn't an incidental thing. It's something that you absolutely have to have. So I'm wondering if it's enough just for this to be sort of a set of urban solutions, and B, if you know of other sort of non-urban things that are going on that might be interesting.
Yeah, so that's a great comment. First of all, you know, more than 50% of the world's population is now living in urban areas. So I grew up in Nashville, so I feel you. But I think that in large part, the experience of growing up in Nashville or the suburbs in North Carolina, that experience is fundamentally driven by this, what's referred to as techno-economic paradigm by Carlotta Perez, who came up with this economic sort of technology and energy and communications paradigm. And so I think it's true that, you know, railroads didn't disappear when cars showed up. The suburbs are not going to disappear because of clean web. But there is going to be a rethinking of the urban experience. And I think the urban experience is going to be better because of these kinds of clean web, resource cloud, and big data kind of experiences or capabilities. So, yes, we're still going to have the suburbs, but it'll be better to live in the city than it would be otherwise.
I'm Steve Brown, and I wanted to actually, I think it's a sort of a counterpoint or an answer to what you were saying in your first question. The examples you showed were really about resource management and efficiency. The gigaton solutions might be, and rather than Zipcar convincing people to walk, I know if we cut our beef consumption in half, it probably is a gigaton solution if you do the math and all of that. And I wonder if you look at, in the same kind of clean web category, things that are really aimed at, and maybe in social, mobile, media categories, aimed at really trying to get people to change their behavior in the first place, change our lifestyles, if that sort of counts as clean web in your view.
Oh, you mean different?
Well, I'd say things that there are companies like, I don't know what, like Runkeeper or Weight Watchers or Whole Foods. There may be things that are really lifestyle related that are using social and mobile technology, new ideas that are lifestyle related that when you actually do the math might have a bigger impact on some of these categories than an efficiency solution, which might actually just drive more consumption in the end.
Yeah. I know that there are efforts out there. I think it kind of depends on what the nature of the change is. You know, I wonder about it's kind of a speculative, maybe somebody will come up with a solution kind of idea, but it seems to me that the whole notion of virtual goods and virtual status that's created online, I wonder to what extent it starts substituting for the status that we attain by having a nice car, by having nice clothes, by having, I mean, there's all these other status elements, ways that we signal to the rest of the world that we have status, and it is, or that we belong to a particular group, and at least for small, very, very, very small population, that's increasingly, that they're getting more and more of that satisfaction, like human satisfaction, from their online experience. I think there might be something there. But I think maybe you're talking about, say, for example, encouraging less meat consumption through an online mechanism.
Well, that's a fairly, I mean, I'd say that there's almost like a lot of the things going on in the consumer health category, if you actually look at them through the lens of clean web, actually have a really big impact. In some ways, it's a really fascinating investment thesis for a venture fund to sort of look at new technologies through the clean web lens. You know, like Airbnb wasn't necessarily formed as a clean web company. It just potentially has that impact. But there are a lot of other things sort of in the consumer health lifestyle that probably also have a really measurable impact. I just wonder if that sort of fits in your investment thesis at all, or is that a sort of totally different category in your mind? So.
Well, I don't know. First of all, there's like investment thesis, and then there's, I would not say that everything that we just talked about is an interesting company from an investor's perspective. You know, the objective of kind of promoting the clean web ideas is not just from an investment perspective. We genuinely believe this has all kinds of benefits for society and for the planet and for ecosystems. And so some of these things, like TextOn, maybe a good example, it's not a business, but it's a really good idea. Some of these dietary changes or these systems that you're alluding to, you know, they may or may not be good businesses. And even if they were good businesses, we may or may not be sort of the right people to understand them as businesses. But that doesn't mean they aren't clean web and they aren't might not have very positive impact on resource use. You know, by the way, one other thing that relates to food that goes back to the North Carolina comment is, There are a number of things around agriculture and food use that I think are clean web and will have an impact on reducing the waste. There's a tremendous, I mentioned before, 30% of food is wasted. in the developed world after harvest, and in the developing world, typically in the field. And I think there's tremendous opportunity in both cases to leverage clean web kind of ideas to dramatically reduce that waste. So, another question?
Hi, Shay Fabade, Power to Switch out of Chicago, and we're hoping the clean web comes.
Yeah.
Hackathon comes to Chicago soon. But
if you're interested, the easiest thing, by the way, if you're interested in getting involved in a new one that's not yet on the books, we hope to do about 10 around the country this year. If you send a tweet out to CleanWebHack, at CleanWebHack, somebody will get back and
we'll
say, yes!
Okay, well, you'll get one before we leave here today.
All right.
But my point goes to something he sort of mentioned. It's a point and question. The Airbnb's efficiency type ideas have the secondary benefit of making people, whatever the net result is, seems to be positive. We run into this problem where the proposition is simple. People should use less energy because it saves them money, which we think is an interest, a benefit they want to get. But I was in a session here yesterday, and apparently people think about their energy use. Americans, on average, think about their energy use for just 6 minutes a year. And that in itself makes you wonder, regardless of how much innovation happens in this space, there's still the end consumer that doesn't really think about it. Do you see any trends in other spaces that might be able to change that? Because it's something we really don't think about that much. So.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I know that there's a lot of concern about the lack of attention that people pay to energy. But honestly, my hope would be that clean web technologies would allow consumers to think about energy 3 minutes a year instead of six. Because why should you have to think about energy? It's not interesting. It doesn't fulfill. It doesn't make you a better human being. It doesn't make you closer to your kids. It doesn't build a better relationship with your partner, your spouse. I mean, those are the things. Spend the extra 3 minutes on that.
Yeah, but people tend to respond to the things they care about. So if they don't care about,
I guess what I'm saying is, let's figure out ways to build things so people can care less, but still make money or still save money.
Still save money.
Because if you have to take something from obscurity and wave it in front of their face in order for them to do something, chances are nobody wants to spend 6 minutes a year thinking about energy, right? It's because they have to. So I'd love to find and hear about solutions where you think about less. Nest is a great example. It kind of gives you the result without having to think about it. At least that's the theory. I'm going to install one when I get back.
Jake from Power to Switch. I guess pretty similarly following on that, you sort of already answered my question. And I guess your response is that people shouldn't think about their energy use, but pretending that they should, using their, or maybe reason that they don't care about it is that they don't understand or can relate to the sort of their energy bill, which is the primary way that they would understand how much they're actually using.
Yeah.
So just kind of curious, what are your thoughts on using different methods to make energy usage more approachable to end consumers like us to actually understand what we are using on a monthly basis? I know some companies are trying to reduce usage by comparatively, saying you are using more or less than the neighbor down the street from you or something like that. I guess just kind of your thoughts on making energy usage more approachable to end consumers to exact change in sense that you know how much you're using, so you should be using less than your neighbor. So
yeah, there are companies out there, Opower, I think is, well, it's not just Opower. There are several out there that are doing these comparisons. And they're having an impact. So I'm sorry if I was a little too flip with the prior comment. Nick is saying Honest Buildings is a good example of allowing you to more sort of highlight and expose what's going on with green building elements in your system or in your building.
People should not think about, kind of going back to, we should be like...
No, I probably am overstating a little bit. I mean, I do think that in the end, we shouldn't have to think about it. But in the short term, there's all this complexity I mean, you're absolutely right. There's so much complexity with electric bills, gas bills, and trying to understand what the implications are, and like, what should you do to be able to reduce that? Terribly complicated problem that if it could be made simple, people, I think, would take action. O-Power, good example.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, Sunil. I enjoyed the examples. And it made me think about Hulu, Netflix. Used to drive down to the video store. They used to make those out of plastic and drive back. And it's all around us as efficiency. It's rewarding, and at the same time, it's helping the environment. And that led me to think about things like World of Warcraft, where you're paying a certain amount of money each month, and then you're engaging with other people's minds. And for a long time, I've been really excited about the idea of, you know, jacking in the Matrix. I think a lot of people get excited, like, wow, and, you know, it's a sensitive topic in some ways, but, you know, I could go on spring break to Cancun, I'm kind of laying in a tanning bed, I'm jacked into this thing, I can have sex with a girl if I want, no STDs here, no pregnancy to worry about, and I feel like, at the same time, like, that's going to curb population growth, that's going to create value, and people, so you're a hot girl, but now everyone has access to hot girls, so now you have to be smart, you know, and I feel like that changes the whole game, and I'm wondering how close you feel like we are to that, because I think that's the future.
What an interesting question.
I think about this all the time.
How close are we to it? I don't know.
Hackathon, hacking the brain. I mean, I went to that session too.
$1,000
for the
$1,000
the world.
For the whole human brain. You know, I hesitate to make a prediction of like something like that because
help me build it, Sunil. They will come.
I mean, you know, this idea has been around for a long time. Howard Rheingold coined the term originally, teledildonics. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is not new, but the kind of prospects and the imagination connecting with, you know, what's possible with sensors and connections and understanding the brain and all that kind of stuff is much further advanced than it was. I'm pretty sure that I know that MRI imaging is now getting fine enough that we can actually have a hope of mapping out, I'm not sure if it's MRI, but the ability to map out all of the synapses in a particular brain is getting sophisticated enough that it's possible to do for a relatively not very complicated brain. And would expect, I think they did it on a worm, actually.
Oh, sweet.
But, so I think that, yes, it's going to be possible one day, but I don't know whether that's like a decade or two decades or a century away. Oh.
In the meantime, I hope we can preserve those rainforests and, you know, keep all of this biodiversity that's here that, I, you know, it's like we've got real and then we've got, you know, the creation of things. And I'd hate to see those things destroyed in the name of entertainment, in the name of IKEA furniture or whatever, so that we can all live this. So like, hey, look at my room. It's like virtual rooms, guys. You know, so that was another point that I really liked that you made.
Yeah, thanks.
I'll see you there.
Feel weird following that. I'm Bradley Short from Business Earth, and I guess I want your opinion on this more, I guess. From like an economic standpoint, it sounds like most of the kind of companies and people who are going to be driving this are startups, and this whole clean web idea is very leveling and I guess, you know, empowering for individual consumers to become, you know, producers in one way or another. Where do you see already established companies going with this? Like, for instance, you know, sticking with the Airbnb example, are they going to get big enough that, you know, Hilton is going to, you know, be attacked and go, you know, be the new Blockbuster or something, or are they going to be able to pivot in a way to, you know, still be a part of this?
I actually thought you were headed a different direction with that. I think for companies that are under attack by, you know, the hotel industry definitely is already feeling the heat of Airbnb and HomeAway and some of the other companies out there. In New York, they passed a law to try to prevent the use of apartments and condos as Airbnb facilities. It's, sorry? Oh, is that right? Yeah. So the comment was it was passed, but Airbnb doesn't fit in the particular definition of it. I think that one of the common themes across all these clean web ideas, and not all of them, but many of the ones that, especially resource cloud kind of ideas, is that they're butting up against, you know, existing industries that are in the physical world. And those industries already have tremendous political power, and in many cases, they're regulated. And when they're regulated, they often, you know, there's this phenomenon of, spacing on the term, but basically regulators often get regulatory capture. And so I think there is a way of overcoming that obstacle. But for the big companies themselves, they're not going to go away, but their business could shrink dramatically. Mm-hmm. And so for Hilton, if it gets hit hard enough, it could go away just as a business entity. I actually thought where you headed was, what can big companies do to take advantage of?
Well, I mean, that was part of it as well with the pivoting around idea. You know, is there a way? I mean, I see how, you know, teleconferencing or something like that is, you know, very obvious. You know, how, like, that's a benefit to business. But, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think that's right. There's all kinds of opportunities for businesses to improve their cost structures and make themselves more efficient. I mean, more efficiency for, you know, natural resources is also usually more efficient for businesses themselves. We recently saw what SAP has done to reduce their carbon footprint, and virtually all of their improvements in carbon footprint have been as a result of clean web actions. Things like teleconferencing and car sharing, those kinds of things.
Recycle Match comes to mind too. You know,
yes,
using.
Recycle Match is a great example.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for your questions. Comment.
Hi, Reed Mallon, UT Austin Energy and Earth Resources Program. I have a very broad question, which is, what is the currency of clean web? Is it cash or is it carbon? And for a lot of these startups, carbon and carbon offset is sort of a marketing tool. It's still a cash. They need cash, really, you know, to succeed. And I'm wondering, how do you see that evolving? Obviously, there are carbon markets. It's something that gets talked about a lot. But what role does that play, and what is the currency of the clean web?
I think the currency of the clean web depends on your perspective. If you are in the world of commerce, it's cash. And if you're in the world of social change, it's carbon or other kinds of ecological services and advantages. I think both are going to benefit from the clean web. Unfortunately, we haven't built the linkage between the two. I've been involved in a lot of the efforts to try to get carbon markets up and going and to defend the California carbon markets. So it's very, very early in that, in the kind of evolution of trying to connect carbon, create a carbon price into the carbon markets. But gosh, I mean, the answer is, oh my God, I wish it was one and the same. It would make things easier. But I think there's a bunch of compelling reasons to go pursue clean web that are independent of whether or not they have all these positive social impacts. I mean, you see a lot of these companies were not started because of their desire to reduce carbon. It's just, that's the way it's worked out. It's kind of the intrinsic nature of what they do that they reduce resources. Ah, so Nick's...
Electricity usage. Yeah, electricity, that's accurate. Yeah, well, I said energy.
So just for the benefit of the podcast, someone off of Twitter corrected the previous comment about 6 minutes of thinking about energy is actually 6 minutes of thinking about electricity.
You spend an hour thinking about gas.
Well, every time you come.
Yeah. Glad we clarified that. So two questions. One, I mean, it's awesome to see the way you're thinking about clean web fitting into this sort of broader decentralization that's happening across the economy. There's a lot of exciting startups fitting in that place. Wringing efficiency out of a century of centralization is provocative. It was interesting to see, though, that Solar Mosaic stood out and that they were one of the only companies in this presentation that wasn't bringing efficiency, but was actually creating new form, you know, bringing new types of production onto market. That, to me, seems like a much harder challenge, particularly given the incumbents that rule the production space. So I'm sort of curious to see, how do you think Clean Web can, how can we see more Clean Web companies in not just bringing efficiency out, which is important, but I don't think alone can get the terawatts that we're talking about. So how do we see that in production? And then the second one, you can, if we have time, you can answer. But I was a community organizer in a former life, so I always like story. So I'm curious, you know, why are you so passionate about this? What's the story behind that?
Okay. Well, I think there's actually, maybe we should include more examples on the production side. there are a number of companies out there that are focused on the production side. Solar tends to be the biggest category because it's the technology that has made, it's the distributed power technology that is the closest to being competitive without subsidies, and it's had a bunch of subsidies to get it there. So I think disrupting this kind of infrastructure-heavy, kind of top-down design power system is more likely to happen with things like solar and storage, fuel cells, microgrids, small wind, those small water or small hydro, more likely to happen with those kinds of technologies than with large-scale wind, large-scale nuclear, large-scale hydro, geo. We're going to need to wrap up soon. But anyway, so I think that those kinds of production technologies and distribution and management technologies are more likely to be disruptive and kind of change rapidly over, like, you know, overnight success that happened that actually took decades to happen. But when it starts happening, we will think, oh my God, how did this happen so fast? I feel like solar is right on the cusp of that. And things like Solar Mosaic to reduce the cost of capital are going to be fundamental to making it happen. But there are other companies as well. We're investors in a company called OneRoof that's making it easier to allow roofers to install solar using information technology and a bunch of partnerships. Other companies like Sungevity and Sunrun are doing similar kinds of things, not for the roofing channel, but for solar. So, and then in terms of story, I got interested in doing, so I was an internet entrepreneur, did well in that world. 2001 happened, I had twins, 9/11 happened. I said, I want to do something more than figure out ways to market more crap to people that they probably don't need. and, you know, started looking around at other things and discovered clean tech. Made my first investment in 2002 and basically took a deep dive into that space. It wasn't until 2007 decided to make it like a serious commitment into it and created the venture fund and all that. But that's kind of the story of how I got to doing that from the internet space. And, you know, I care about this. I genuinely believe there's a lot of money to be made, and I also think that it can result in massive positive impact for our society, for our world, for our kids. So I think we're actually out of time. It's 4:30. That went fast. It was fun. Thank you very much.